Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I am your host, Julia McLaughlin. This episode is sponsored by ReviewRobin, a review management software for marketing agencies to help you guys get your clients more positive reviews. You can check that out at getreviewrobin.com. Now, my guest today is Matt Schwartz, who is the founder of Inspree, a web development agency based out of Atlanta, Georgia. His agency focuses on helping marketers navigate this complex web terrain by providing best-in-class web technology solutions. Today, we're going to be discussing Matt's journey of building his agency and what he's learned along the way. So thanks so much for joining us today, Matt.
Of course. Thanks, Julia, so much for having me on the show.
Absolutely. So to get started, let's dive into a couple questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit.
Sounds good.
So tell us, what really motivates or inspires you as an entrepreneur?
Sure. So I think it really comes down to client satisfaction, honestly, feeling like, you know, we're positively contributing to our clients, not only for them, but also for their own clients. Mm-hmm. Just having that customer service to us is probably one of the biggest things that we really value in friendliness. As sad as it kind of is, we all know that sometimes web developers aren't known for being the most transparent, easy to work with. That's something that we really try to be take into account just because it really comes down to why we do what we do.
Absolutely. I love that. And how did you get into digital marketing originally?
So I built, you know, websites back in middle school and high school myself. I just was always kind of attracted to computers, thought I would go into IT. And then I kind of realized there was more creative space with websites where, you know, I could do the technical stuff, but also get into design. And that kind of morphed into, eventually starting my own agency after a corporate job or two. And then marketing obviously is a huge part of why web development exists. And why you design and develop websites to make sure that it's really meeting the marketing objectives of the client.
Love it. And so tell me about your story of, you know, really starting Inspree and, you know, what really was the deciding factor to go out on your own and take the plunge and start your own agency?
Yeah. So even when I was a kid, I kind of always wanted to run my own business. I just always was attracted to it. I was that kid on the side of the road doing the whole like popsicle lemonade stand thing with my friends.
Yes.
I really did that.
I did too.
Right. Like I think it's a sign for, you know, a lot of people. So I started as I got kind of older and I realized I could make some websites and contribute just at school with the organizations at like even our middle school and high school. Then, you know, I realized, oh, people will pay me for these. And so I kind of started doing that on the side. And then in college, I went to UGA, go Dawgs. And then I still was working, building sites. I also worked at the university, maintaining some of their websites. And it was just, you know, it was a really good gig. It was remote, which today, you know, there's a lot of remote jobs. But back then, a remote job at a university was pretty insane.
Yeah, definitely.
So I really enjoyed that. And I was pretty sure that when I graduated, I was going to start my own thing relatively quickly. I knew I really wanted to focus on marketing, digital marketing and websites. And I got my degree in information management systems because it gave me a good background on more of the technical and project management side, not so much on the marketing side, but I felt like I kind of already had picked up some of that. So essentially, you know, I kind of knew I was going to go into some sort of web design development. I took a corporate job For about, I took two jobs, basically a contract and a corporate job for about a year and a half. And on that corporate job, when I hit the 1 year anniversary, I literally quit on my 1 year. They actually became my first client though, and we still have them. And it's been 12 years. Is that right? 11 years, 11, 12 years.
That's awesome.
So they ended up keeping me on as a contractor. And then what really drove me though to do it is I really enjoyed working with the people I had there, but I really wanted to get more knowledge about, different types of marketing and websites. And they're a great company to work for. They still are. But I wanted to see more industries, try out, I hadn't been able to do like e-commerce with them, nothing like that. So essentially, that's how I went off on my own, is I knew that I was already having some side clients, so I could just keep picking them up from there. And I had saved up some money and I just kind of went for it.
Amazing. And then what would you say would be the biggest challenge that you had to encounter or overcome rather in those early days?
Probably, the main things are all related to setting client expectations, setting client guardrails, not so much direct communication. Like I always was very good at communicating and, answering and all of that, but really setting up from the beginning, how this was going to proceed with this project, and also just recognizing clients that maybe aren't a good fit for me. Early on, I think you're very tempted to say yes to every project.
Absolutely.
And this was back in the day when people actually got gigs off Craigslist. So, I had clients, a ton of my initial clients were off Craigslist. Mm-hmm. And some of them were good and some of them were probably not the best fit for me for various reasons. So I think that was a challenge in it itself, just to recognize those warning signs and kind of figure out who was worth really working with, that I could provide the right type of value to them. That took me a while to learn. And I think it's a common thing that people run into.
I hear that all the time. That's usually something that a lot of agencies talk about overcoming later on in their career or in the journey of building their agency. So that's interesting that you had that insight to really pick up on that early on when the agency was so young.
Well, I think you do, you don't want to just kind of repeatedly get into a situation that you're not comfortable with, or you feel like you're not able to provide, exactly what they're doing, not maybe because of your technical skills, but maybe what their objectives are, they're not even clear yet, right? They need to be referred somewhere else. So I did start to do that pretty early on, but I also think it's a process. I don't think I've perfected that by any means. I still stumble sometimes and, take on a client that, maybe isn't the best fit for us. And we get the work done and they're happy, but at the same time, it maybe wasn't, like I said, the best use of our time. So it's always a struggle, I think, because you just want to make people happy. It goes back to kind of one of our core values, right?
Yeah. So what is a red flag that you look for now? So to ensure that you don't get into that predicament where you're just not a good fit.
Yep. So there's a couple red flags, but I think one of the first ones probably is just looking at their needs and seeing if we're the best fit for their needs. That's probably, one that's common that, we've tried to get a little more specific on the type of audience we have over the years. I wouldn't say we're niched in, but we are a little more niched in than we used to be. So there are certain mm-hmm. clients where, I have to look at, if our team's going to have to learn something new, or it's a skill that maybe not everyone on the team has, which means only one specific person can do it. That obviously really limits our resource pipeline of how we can allocate the rest of our projects. So essentially, while it may not actually lose us technical money, it could affect our bottom line because we're not really optimizing our time and resources properly. Mm-hmm. So that's not really on the client, but that's probably one of the main ones, just trying to focus on what is a good fit for us based on our skill set and the things that we do all the time. obviously, like etiquette is another one. We have certain ways we communicate, that sort of thing. You know, some agencies are very good about texting with clients. We don't really text with clients. We like to schedule calls. And some clients, that's just not the sort of thing that they're looking for. And, you know, that there's nothing wrong with that. It's just from, you know, our perspective, we kind of try to make sure we have time for everybody. And sometimes texts and unscheduled calls can make that difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd love to pivot a little bit and talk about sales. So I'd love to learn, you know, what your sales process looks like within Inspiree and how you are bringing in leads and then closing those prospects.
Definitely. So like a lot of smaller agencies, because, you know, there's seven of us, we're not a huge agency. So like with a lot of small agencies, the founder or the founders, one of them ends up being a salesperson, at least initially. So I still handle a lot of the sales, but our actual channels for sales are almost all still referrals, which I know is not always the best because it does keep you going in certain ways because you tend to get the same type of clients at the same maybe level. So that's something, you know, I've been working on and trying to push into some other channels, but we still primarily get a lot through referrals. We have gotten some like cold leads through our website more in the past couple of years than we ever have. And part of that's that we started doing at least some blogging. I always joke with our clients, you know, do what I say, not what I do. Because that took us a while to start to add some substantial blogs to our site, but some of those have actually picked up clients from content marketing. But yeah, referrals is definitely in. And then kind of our process when we bring in a new client is we're very much upfront trying to figure out discovery as much as possible. Again, just because we want to be able to provide the right solution. You know, a lot of agencies go out there and they kind of just throw together a template and send it to them, like a templated proposal, which I think, you know, sometimes isn't a bad thing, but I think the problem is it's taught a lot of clients that that's the right way to do things, which I think it kind of isn't necessarily the right way all the time. Just because when we're training these people that, oh, we should take the first, you know, we want these proposals in 3 days. That doesn't really leave a lot of time to actually figure out what they need. And so a lot of times they can get something built and it might get built properly, but it may not actually resolve or solve what they're trying to do with their you know, objectives. So that's why we tend to do discovery up front. As much as possible. If we think something's going to take more than 8 or 10 hours, we'll typically have some sort of paid discovery at that point. But if it's under that, we typically will just work with the client to figure it out, especially because we do a lot more technical marketing solutions. So there could be, you know, third-party vendors involved, integrations where we need to get on a call. So we kind of judge that based on the client. But we do try to come up with some high-level solution as much as possible so they can kind of compare apples to apples. And I typically, like I said, lead one of those. Usually our project manager will get it brought in somewhere in the second or third call, and we may bring one of our developers in at that point as well. But typically I'll take the initial call, kind of set up that connection, that relationship with the client to start things off typically.
Interesting. And then, so do you have any tips for creating really happy clients who at the end of the day are going to bring in more of those referrals?
Sure. So I think there's a couple of things I think I already briefly touched on, just communication and transparency. Yep. I you know, it sounds sad, I have to say that, but it's the reality. We definitely, that's one of our core values is transparency as well. So a lot of times, you know, if we don't know something, we'll just say, we don't know this, but we'll figure it out. We'll come back to you. We'll keep you posted. Or the same thing, if it's something that we can't get to right now, we'll go ahead and say, hey, we received this, give us X amount of time and we'll get back to you. So that's definitely one thing that we've been told over the years is that we are, you know, very clear about our communication. Another thing is probably around coming up with a solution, which comes back to what I just said with the scoping. We try to come up with more of a custom tailored solution for the client to make sure we're kind of meeting their objectives. And, you know, when we, I think it was last year, last year we had another branding agency actually help us with a rebrand we're working on. And so they interviewed a bunch of our clients, and nearly everyone said the number one thing they liked about us was that we came up with a custom tailored solution for what they needed. And it doesn't mean it's necessarily custom software. It just means it was specific to them, because sometimes we'll say this SaaS platform, which doesn't necessarily provide as much for us on the income side, is a better fit for you. And, you know, you're going to be happier here based on, you know, these factors or what have you.
Yeah. Interesting. So I'd love to talk a little bit about productivity. So are there any productivity hacks that you have discovered over the years to help save you time and be more efficient in your day-to-day?
So one that I have done myself a lot of times is setting up automated sequencing for sales leads. So essentially, you know, you get a lot of emails, and a lot of times it's just checking back in on a new lead. And, you know, a lot of times we haven't even sent a proposal yet. Sometimes we have, sometimes we haven't. Mm-hmm. So just using an automated email sequencing system, and it still comes from your email where it says, hey, just checking back in on this. If there's nothing, you know, it goes to the second email, the third email. That really essentially is the exact same thing I would be writing to the customer anyways.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really come off not genuine, in my opinion. And it really just keeps that sales, you know, moving forward. Because as they say, sometimes it can take, you know, 5-7 times before someone actually gets back to you. And that's just the reality of, you know, how we are. So we'll set something up like that. And I've done it both in Gmail using like an add-on, something like Follow Up CC is an example, which is kind of like Boomerang, if you've ever heard of Boomerang, but it's a little more, it has sequencing built in. There's a couple other tools like that. I've also done it. Yeah. And, you know, they're not that expensive. They're like $30 a month. And all you do is when you get an email, the first time you send it out, you check a box that says send follow-up, and the system will just be sending out that follow-up. And it's perfect for something like a sale. Obviously, mm-hmm. certain things, it doesn't make sense. I don't do it on all of them, but it is really helpful. And you can do the same thing in a CRM. Not all CRMs have that, but a lot of them do. So that's probably on the sales side, the biggest, you know, way it frees up my time, because that's 70% of my sales is just following up on clients.
Totally.
You know, or leads.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And do you have any creative ways to nurture that relationship when you're following up with leads, or is it a pretty standard just checking in?
So a lot of times I check in, but what I'll typically do is if I haven't heard back, usually on the third time, I'll typically send, I forgot what they call this. I got this from another marketing firm. Essentially, I send an email that's more of like a closer email, mm-hmm. That just to be like, hey, you know, haven't heard back. We're going to close this out, you know, for now, let us know. And about half the time it actually does push the project on, because people think you're leaving, essentially.
Yeah, and exactly.
It sounds counterintuitive, but it does work a lot of the time. And I didn't believe it until I tried it. The magic email, I think, is what this group that I'm in calls it, but it does work. So.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I do, yeah, after about, usually about, yeah, like 4 or 5 is like my limit for follow-ups. And and then I just say, hey, like something along the lines of like, this is the last time, like just wanted to reach out to you one last time is usually what I say. And yeah, it's true. It has such a high response rate. It's really cool. I love that strategy.
It works well. In worst cases, I feel like they almost always, like you said, respond. So even if, you know, they don't go with me, at least they usually get some sort of response back, which is always nice to kind of have resolved on where they sit. So it's definitely nice.
Interesting. So where do you see Inspiree in 5 years' time?
Good question. So from our perspective, you know, we focus, you know, primarily on more technical solutions. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to say we have everything figured out, because we don't. I think some agencies are much farther than we are on it. But essentially, most likely continuing down that path of working on, you know, more complex solutions for, you know, medium to enterprise clients is definitely one of our branches. The other thing is, you know, we have built some side projects, some software applications. So I think we'll continue to explore those from a SaaS model perspective, cool. Because it kind of gives us that ability to, you know, create something and get a product out there that affects even more people than our service work does.
Yeah. So are you currently building software and then signing your current clients up using it? Or is that something that you're just purely doing in the future?
So the way that we're doing it with the software that we've built right now is we're using a lot of it internally. We've got, like I said, a couple of pieces of software. Some of it's built for agencies. So, you know, we're testing it out with a couple of agencies that we know, just to see how, you know, it works from their perspective. And then, you know, we'll kind of take it from there if we decide to release it publicly or not. Mm-hmm. But it does give us, like I said, some sort of just other channel to be a little more creative in our own way, which the whole team is mostly developers, so they really enjoy that.
Awesome. Well, we are getting ready to start wrapping up here shortly, but is there anything else you would like to add to our listeners that you think would be beneficial?
I'm trying to think if there's anything specifically that comes up. I was kind of going to go into this possibly, but I would say one thing that I have learned that took me way too long to figure out, mm-hmm. Is really just on having your processes down, having your SOPs really documented. I think that's something I failed to do as I transitioned from a freelancer who had a couple contractors into, you know, someone with actual employees, mm-hmm. where we had to get all that information out of my brain. Not to mention, it found a lot of inefficiencies in the process and places we could automate things. So I would say, you know, if you are an agency, you should definitely be doing it. But even if you're a freelancer, writing that stuff out now will still end up making it easier, especially if something happens where you do want to grow the team. It's going to be a lot easier transition if you have as much as possible documented.
Love it. Great advice. Absolutely. So we're going to move on to the fast five now, which are five rapid fire questions. So what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
Sure. So this one isn't specific to digital marketing, but it does definitely affect digital marketing, and it's just everyday life. You probably heard of it. So it's called The Paradox of Choice by Barry Schwartz. That book, for me personally, was really helpful because I really do like to provide the best. And a lot of times, even with my clients, I do that, but in my own life, I do that. And, you know, that book really just goes through the premise of, you know, how when you have too many choices, it can actually overwhelm and end up hurting you, essentially. Mm-hmm. And when you do make a choice, you second guess that choice even more because you knew all the other choices you had.
Yeah.
So the way I kind of apply that in my personal life is obviously reducing the choices and just kind of, you know, going with my gut on things. But even when we're working with clients, that's kind of how we treat it too. And that's why that custom tailored solution usually works, because we try not to give the client like five different choices, because a lot of times they're coming to us as the experts and it's not really going to do any good if we're giving them every choice under the sun.
Yeah.
You know, we may give them two sometimes, because we do like people to obviously have some decision power in that, but really tailoring it down typically is going to set those expectations. And actually, you know, if we've done our homework, they're going to end up happier with the overall product that we put together. So that's a super, super great book. If you've never read it, it's fantastic.
Awesome. And then what does your morning routine look like?
Ooh, my morning routine. I'm a pretty late riser, I can't lie. It's kind of embarrassing. I probably wake up at like 8 o'clock half the time.
No, everyone's, but some people just like thrive working, you know, later hours and then have to sleep in. I think, you know, you got to do what works for your body.
Yeah, exactly. So that tends to be my thing. I picked it up when I was younger. I was kind of a night owl, especially when I was working corporate, doing some work also at night. I just kind of got into that. And then as I, grew, obviously with clients, they usually aren't emailing you at 9 o'clock at night. And if I send out emails, I schedule them so they don't know I'm working at 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah. Then you'll start getting those emails at 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah, exactly. Typically I wake up pretty late in that sense, make some sort of like kale fruit smoothie or something like that, get ready. And we work at a co-working space 3 days a week. So I'll go in 3 days a week with a couple of our teammates that are here in Atlanta. That really just gives us some space to, just get our heads away from home. We do a good mix kind of, and we're very flexible on that. There's days we don't go in 3 days. We try to keep it flexible, but that's kind of the typical process. And then we meet, a couple days a week for stand-up meetings with the whole team.
Very good. And is there a CEO that you follow or study?
So I think as far as nationally, not particularly. Obviously there's cool things to learn from a lot of the very well-known CEOs out there. Mm-hmm. But really just locally, there's some agencies that I've worked with a long time, an SEO agency called Click Ready. The owner, Craig, here in Atlanta is fantastic. And a Creative Mischief, which is a branding and strategy agency, co-owner Isham is really fantastic. And they're a little bit older than me. They've been running their agency even longer than me. So, I really kind of look up to them, and they provide not only expertise that I don't necessarily have on the SEO side and on the branding strategy side, but also just they're about the same size, maybe slightly bigger than us. So it's always kind of interesting to see how they would take different approaches to things.
Interesting. And what is your favorite online tool?
As of late, it's probably our project management tool, ClickUp. Mm-hmm. Been very happy with ClickUp. We just migrated maybe a month ago.
Okay.
And we came from a piece of software called Paymo, which I used as a freelancer. It's great as a freelancer. We were on it for almost 11 years. Mm-hmm. But ClickUp really provides a lot more flexibility. It's a little terrifying at the beginning because it has so much flexibility. But I was watching these YouTube videos. I'm like, wait, so I need to hire a consultant to tell me how to just set up like this basic software, right? And then I kind of figured it out on my own how to do it. But it was, with all that power, it can be a little daunting to say the least. But once you define things, it's actually really fantastic. So I've been really happy with that. And then the only other one I'll mention is Ghost Inspector. If you do any sort of web development, or even if you're a marketer, Ghost Inspector is an automation tool that you can run on your websites, and it will basically run through tests like form tests or clicking on pages. And you don't actually have to know code to even do it. It has a little Chrome tool where you just go in there and it records every move you make essentially with your mouse and click on, and then it will run that test every day. So for example, if you want to test, is someone able to add an item to a cart, it will do all that for you. And you don't have to write any code to do it. So Ghost Inspector, I check it out if you haven't used it.
Ghost Inspector, I love it. Definitely going to check that out. And then last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
So I think outside of the documentation and processes, probably the biggest thing is just figuring out your direction and really taking time to do that. And that goes back to not taking on every project under the sun. Mm-hmm. I think it can be good at the beginning, but I maybe did that a little too long in my opinion. So, I wish I'd really taken the time to like write out, a mission statement, which, mm-hmm. When I was younger, I was like, oh, it's a mission statement. I don't need that. Like, what is that? Really? Like, I was like, I just, want to help people and build cool websites, right? And then as you learn more and you realize what value you provide and how you like to provide it, I wish I had kind of done that, at least in some version at the beginning, gone through a full branding exercise, even if it was just with myself about my values and my mission and the voice of the company, just because it helps you really set the compass for the type of projects you should be taking on, essentially. So if someone yeah. doesn't meet those values, doesn't meet your mission, you know, it's nothing personal, but essentially they're just not a good fit. And having something documented, I think, can make a huge difference to getting you to where you want to be faster, mm-hmm. especially if you know at the beginning where you want to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Great points. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Matt. It was a pleasure to have you on the show, and I really enjoyed our conversation.
Of course. Thanks so much, Julia, for having me on.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.